during the period that we're in now of Bein HaMetzorim, time between Shivasar B'Tammuz and Tisha B'Av, the three Haftorahs of the Shabbosos in that period of time are special Haftorahs, and they're called Sholosh de Purunusa, the three Haftorahs of misfortune. And the beginning words of those Haftorahs, I think, are very significant in telling us how to correct the situation we're in and to turn it from days of misfortune to days of happiness. The first Haftorah is Divrei Yirmiyahu, the words of Yirmiyahu. This week's Haftorah, the second one, is Shimu Dvar Hashem, listen, hear the word of Hashem. And next week's Haftorah, the last one before Tisha B'Av, is Chazon Yishayahu, the vision of Yishayahu. And I think that the three stages teach me how to consider properly what is wrong and how to correct it. And that is the following. Just now mention it in general, and then we'll go into great detail. The first thing you need is to appreciate the importance of words. If you're going to heed those words and think about them, you have to know how important they are. So that's Divrei Yirmiyahu, the words of Yirmiyahu. Appreciate how important words are, especially words that come from very important sources. Secondly, after you appreciate the importance of words, listen, pay attention to those words. And thirdly, after you listen and pay attention, think, ponder, take those words to heart and examine them. If you do all of those three things, then things can get better. Now let's go into detail. First thing, Divrei Yirmiyahu, appreciate the importance of words, okay? And the importance of Torah, the importance of Tefillah, the importance of Tochacha, of rebuke, right? And realize that words are not just things that, you know, sound waves, but they're actual, real, existing, there's something of substance, okay? And we can relate that to the Sedra. The Sedra starts out with the Parsha of Nedarim. Person makes a vow, just a bunch of words, but he's not allowed to desecrate his words. The words have to take effect, and he can't just ignore what he said. What he said is effective, it's real, and the only time that he can change and absolve himself from what he said, what his words were, is through Chacham, a Talmud Chacham. He can be Mater Neder, right? He can absolve him of his vow, or a husband sometimes can absolve his wife from her vows, and a father can sometimes absolve his daughters from a vow. So what we learn from there is that words are very, very significant. They create a reality. You can't just ignore them, but they also are under the jurisdiction of leaders, and they're not hefker either, and they have to be directed by Talmidei Chachamim and by those people who people have to listen to. And therefore, to point this out, there's a Gemara that says the following: Adam la'amal yular. It's a pasuk in Iyov. People were created to toil. And the Gemara says, I don't know what kind of toil is that. Is it physical toil? Right? Amal, what's it called? What?
What is toil?
Toil means to work. People were created to work. Right? I don't know if it is physical labor or speech. When it says, there's another pasuk that says that it's talking about talk. Walk talking. I don't know if it means talking stam or Torah. Now the pastor tells me it's Torah. So the Chafetz Chaim explains what I think a person was created to talk. Right? A person was created to work. He says yes. This world is a imperfect undeveloped raw material world that God wanted us to develop and perfect. And part of that perfection is in physical things. We build on the imperfect, right, undeveloped world and develop it physically. And that's an important thing, to develop the world. The Rav Amram gave man the ability to continue and complete his creation. Asher bora Elokim la'asos. God created the world that man should then complete it and develop it and perfect it. And along with that, it perfect himself. But that's not the main thing. The main thing is by use of speech. Speech can develop and perfect in a more significant way. Speech is what people communicate with each other. And through communication, they can work together to perfect the world. Because if you do it on your own, you can't do too much. But if you do it in a concerted group effort, and that's what happened with the Tower of Babel. When they couldn't communicate, then they couldn't build, they couldn't create, they couldn't go forward. Communication is very important. Speech also is sicha. It's davening, prayer. Prayer is a very important aspect of speech, and it also creates a very, very strong reality. But all of that is very important, but it's not the major important thing. The major reality of building in this world and perfecting it is through Torah. The words of Torah are the strongest reality. And they, mamash, create and build the world. So a person was created in his essence to create the world spirit through spiritual speech, but there's also the idea of davening, of communication, and of physical labor also. So a person has to realize that speech is perhaps even a stronger reality than material things. Because speech doesn't only build the physical world, it builds all of the spiritual worlds also, which impact on the physical world. And that's why when they went out to fight against Midian, they took 1,000 people from each tribe to literally physically fight in the army, and an equal 1,000 people, the Medrash says, to daven, to go into the battlefield and to just sit, stand there and daven. Why they have to go to the battlefield? They could have, what's it called, they could have stayed home and daven. But they had to realize that their davening was mamish like fighting. That is just as effective as the guns and the swords, right, and the bombs were, just as effective were the words of davening. Words are very, very real and effective. So they went in onto the battlefield to daven, realizing that they're accomplishing the same thing as the soldiers. And in addition to that, they also had people sitting and learning Torah. Pinchas went in, not to fight, but with the Klei HaKodesh, with the Aron, and with the Torah. The Torah also, the words of Torah are as effective, if not more effective, than the physical tools of war. Both are important. But the real success in battle, the victory comes because the Torah, words of Torah, and the words of prayer back those physical tools of war. Okay. And that could be the idea that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, it says, because they didn't make a bracha on the Torah before they learned. Shelo berchu b'Torah tchila. So the obvious question is, that's why the destruction came. They learned Torah, but they didn't make a bracha on it. So I was thinking, there are many explanations. One, I think, could be the following. We only make a bracha on actions. We don't make a bracha on things that are merely thought or just speech. It has to be the kind of speech that's an action kind of speech. For instance, reading the Megillah. You can't just say any words. You have to read it from a Megillah and say certain words. So on that you make a bracha. But bittul chametz, right? Saying, annulling your chametz, you don't make a bracha on that because just words. Right? There's no specific words you have to say. It's just words. So they thought Torah is just words. So they didn't make a bracha on it. If they understood that Torah is the mainstay of creation, and what you learn Torah, you're creating, it's a reality, then they would have made a bracha on learning Torah. But since they didn't realize the force and the reality of what Torah was, they just thought it was a bunch of words, so they didn't treat it with the right respect, they didn't learn it with the proper toil and work and investment, and therefore, because of that, they ended up doing tremendous sins, and the churban came. So that is what's it called, the idea of the bracha on Torah, lasot b'divrei Torah, that we learn that God is a melamed Torah, God teaches Torah. These words are words of real reality, and they're the words, God's words are the words that went into creation. Why did God create the world? With words. And these are the same words that continue creating and perfecting the world. So that is the first stage. The first haftorah is divrei Yirmiyahu, appreciate the power of words. Next, once you appreciate the power of words, listen to those words, pay attention to them, and realize that they're directed towards you. I always like to give the example. It says that Cain and Hevel argued about something, right? And then Cain said something to Hevel, and then they were in the field, and Cain killed Hevel. So the Medrashim say what Cain said to Hevel was they were arguing about who's going to inherit the various parts of the world or whatever, and from the argument, Cain ended up killing Hevel. But the Ibn Ezra says a different idea, and there's a major question on what he says, which we'll get to. He says like this. He says that Cain and Hevel brought sacrifices. Cain's sacrifice was not accepted, and Hevel's was, and Cain was very upset. So God told him, look, don't be upset and blame your brother because his was accepted, yours wasn't. You both could have been accepted. If you will better your ways, then you'll also be accepted. And if you won't, then the Yetzer Hara is there to catch you all the time. So Cain got this mussar from Hashem. Immediately after that it says, Vayomer Cain al Hevel Achiv, Cain said something to Hevel, and then it says when they were in the field, Cain killed Hevel. Says the Ibn Ezra, what's the simple meaning of the sentences? That Cain told over to Hevel what God just told him. But it doesn't make sense. Why would that cause him to kill Hevel? If he told over to Hevel the mussar he just got, right, the rebuke he got from God, why would that cause him to kill Hevel? Doesn't seem to be proper sequence. But the idea, I think, is the following. Cain heard this rebuke from God. But he said, you know, it's very nice words, but I don't need that. Right? There's only one other person around. Probably God meant it for his sake. So he went over and told the rebuke to Hevel. But he didn't take it to heart. He didn't hear that God was talking to him. And therefore he ended up killing Hevel. Had he paid attention and realized that God's talking to him, he never would have killed Hevel. So it's not enough just to appreciate the importance of words. You have to realize the words are directed towards you. And take them to heart.
How come he didn't understand if, like, Hashem told him, like, what did Hashem tell him?
He told him that if you better your ways, then you'll be forgiven, and you'll be able to also be successful. And if not, the Yetzer Hara is there. He heard what God said, but he said to himself, "I don't really need this. I'm already okay, right? So my brother probably needs it. So God told me probably to pass it on to him." And really, if you pay attention, you can hear God's words everywhere. It says that the Ten Commandments were given, Kol Gadol V'lo Yosaf. God hasn't stopped giving the Ten Commandments. It constantly reverberates in the atmosphere. Just have to open your ear and hear it constantly. And the truth is that God is constantly speaking to us. How many of you have recently heard God speak to them? All of you. What do you think you're hearing now? And that's not a haughty statement. But I'm just a pipeline. I'm telling you Torah. And Torah comes from God. So I'm just conveying to you the word of the Rabbonus. So you're hearing God speak. You open up a sefer. Who's speaking to you? God. So if you're attentive and you realize that it's directed towards you, you can hear God speaking to you from people who teach you Torah, from Svarim that you open and learn Torah from, and so on. And it says that that's why there's a sound that goes out from Har Sinai every day, that the Torah is being re-given, right? It's in the waves. You have to turn on your radio to get it. There's radio waves in the air constantly. If you never turn on your radio and tune in, you're never going to hear those radio waves. So you have to tune in to the right station and turn on your radio to hear it. So, and that's why it says a basco, an echo goes out. That's a tremendous disgrace that people don't tune in. They don't hear it. God's constantly broadcasting and we never turn on the radio and never tune in. So that's a terrible disgrace to the Torah. In addition, you don't even have to hear it from Torah. You can hear it from nature. Shamayim misaprim kvod keil. The heavens speak the glory of God. Right? Look up into the heavens, look at nature, and it's supposed to teach you about the Ribbono Shel Olam. So God is communicating to us from nature. Not even, you have to look at outside. Look at your own body. L'cho amar libi bakshu ponai. Right? My heart speaks to me in God's name. Seek my face. Just look at your bodily functions. Look at your body. And you'll see that the Creator, you'll see God in action. So, if you are attentive and you open your ears and you tune in and you realize that this is all being spoken to you, then you can hear God everywhere. And you can hear Him also from other people. You know, it says in Pirkei Avos, Hu Haya Omer, He used to say, right? He doesn't say he went around saying this all the time. But if you looked at that Tana, you could see on him and his behavior this idea. You could learn from him this idea. And it's not only Tanoim. Everybody has something to teach. Right? If you look and hear that people's actions are talking to you, you can learn tremendously good things from many people, and you can learn what not to do from some people too. But you have to be able to get the right message. And therefore, in the Sedra also, we find that there's a halacha of what's it called, don lekatzchus, of judging people favorably, so you get the right message from them, and not the wrong message. And there's also, we learn from B'nai God and Reuven, the Ish and the Kiyam Hashem Yisrael, is two sides to the coin. A person has to do things that don't look suspicious, so you don't cause people to suspect you wrongly, and not to be don lekatzchus. And on the other side, the other person has to give the person the benefit of the doubt. So I can't do things which would tempt you not to give me the benefit of the doubt, and you, on the other hand, have to give me the benefit of the doubt. So you have to be able to broadcast, right, the proper message by not doing things that are suspicious, doing things that people know that you're doing what's right, and not do it in a way that people have doubts. And on the other side, you have to receive the right message by giving people the benefit of the doubt. So that we learn also from the Sedra. And finally, once you appreciate the importance of words, and you know how to tune in to them, and realize that they're directed at you, okay, then you have to think. After you already listen, now you have to think. And think deeply into what you're hearing. And see all the details, and also see the rule. You can't miss the forest because of the trees by getting too bogged down in the details and not see the whole picture. On the other hand, you can't just see the whole picture and forget about the trees. You have to see the forest and the trees, the details and the general idea. That's part of thinking. Of pondering, right? And that's why it says in the last Haftorah, right? Yada shor kol nehu, an ox knows its master. The chamor evus balav, and a donkey at least knows who feeds it. But Yisrael lo yada, the Jewish people didn't know even these simple things. They forgot who feeds them, who's their master. They forgot the Ribbono Shel Olam completely. Why? Because amilo hisbonak, they didn't think. What is instinctive to an animal, to a human being, is forgotten if you don't think. Human beings were given the ability to think. If you don't think, you miss the most simple things. So after you appreciate the importance of words, and you hear them, right, and you realize they're referring to you, now think into them. Right? Think deeply into them. And that is the opposite of what we find in the Sedra, that a person who gets angry makes mistakes. Moshe Rabbeinu even. Moshe Rabbeinu got angry at the soldiers who came back because they kept alive the women from Midian. And because of that, he made a mistake. And when he gave over the halachos of what's it called, of how to decontaminate themselves from the dead bodies or whatever that they came in contact with, he only told them how to purify themselves from the tumma of the dead bodies, and he forgot to tell them how to make the kalim they brought from Midian kosher. Right? They brought a lot of utensils from Midian that they got as part of the booty, and they had to kosher them. So he didn't say that. Eleazar had to say those halachas. So even Moshe Rabbeinu, when you get angry, you make mistakes. And it's not a punishment that God made him forget what his learning was. But the idea is when you get angry, you focus in on one thing that bothers you. And you don't see the whole picture. So Moshe Rabbeinu focused in on his anger at what they did wrong in the battle. So he was able to see how to get out the, the negative effects of the battle. But what he didn't see was the positive things. They brought in this booty, they were able to kosher it and use it now. That he was so focused in on one part, on one negative, that he didn't see the rest of the whole picture. He didn't see the other things. So a person, in order to really understand something, has to see the whole picture, has to see the trees and the forest together. And therefore, what's it called? We have in the second Sedra, it lists all of the journeys of the Jewish people, where they went and where they came from, and then all of them together. The idea is these journeys in the desert were a rebuke. They were there to teach us for 40 years. Each place taught a different lesson. And each place, we went out of that place with a lesson, and we came from the place before learning a lesson. So each one was piecemeal. At the end of the 40 years, we're able to see all 42 journeys together, right? To see where they came from, where they were going to, and the whole picture together. Now you could really accept the lessons that God wanted to teach us in a proper way. Instead of seeing it piecemeal, one by one, now look at the whole picture and see it, all of them, as part of the whole picture. Now you'll really get the benefit and really get the lesson. That's why those journeys were counted and written down in a totality in order to get the message and get the lesson in its most perfect way. Okay, and in order for all of these things to be effective, to realize the importance of words, to listen and focus in and hear that the words are directed towards you, and then to think into them, you need leaders, teachers, to help you realize what the words are, and to realize how to listen, and to realize how to think. And those are the Levium. And it's interesting that the Levium, on the one hand, were separated from the Jewish people. They had their own cities, 42 cities. They weren't interspersed amongst the Jewish people completely, because in order to accept the leadership of a leader, there has to be a certain distance between you and the leader, where you can look up to somebody and not feel that you're just your friend. Because if you look at your leader as a friend, then he's not a leader. In America today, there is a feeling that parents should be the friends of their children. And some people actually put that into practice. They have their children call them by their first name, right? You know, Jack and Jane. They're not daddy and mommy, but, you know, Jack and Jane, and they're my best friends. That's very nice. So those children have two more friends, but have no parents. In order to have some kind of authority figure, you have to be an authority figure. There has to be a certain amount of distance. You have to be very loving. You have to be very friendly, but not a friend. Same thing goes with a rabbi or a teacher. There's a certain distance where the person has somebody to look up to rather than just another friend. So the Levium were separated from the Jewish people. At the same time, the cities of the Levium were the places where a person who murdered unintentionally could find refuge. And the cities of refuge were also the cities of the Levium. Now, the cities that were mainly for the Levium also functioned as cities of refuge, and the cities that had their main function as a city of refuge also were the cities of Levium, which means the following. True, a Levi has to be, to a certain degree, set aside, but he has to be very sensitive, right, to even the lowest strata of society, people who end up killing people, right, unintentionally. They have to be sensitive to them and be a miklat and be a refuge for these people. At the same time, they have to be the people who those people look up to for kapara and to teach them how to be rehabilitated. So it works both ways. The cities of refuge are the place where you put the Levium in order to be mechaper, to atone, and to teach people how to better their ways. At the same time, the cities that belong to the Levium should be the cities that can be used as refuge of Levim, should be sensitive to these people. And that's why it says the Kohen Gadol should daven for people that this shouldn't happen. People shouldn't kill people. And not only that, but the Kohen Gadol, what's it called, death, atones for these people. So we have the Levim atoning, teaching, rebuking, at the same time being sensitive to the needs of even the lowest strata of society. So if you have all of these things, those are the three haftorahs during this time. Divrei Yirmiyahu, you appreciate words. Shimu Dvar Hashem, you know how to listen. And Chazon Yishayahu, you know how to look, have a vision, see and think deeply into what it is that you hear. Then we'll be able to see that these days are transformed from days of mourning to days of rejoicing. When ha'emes v'hashalom ehavu, when we appreciate and love the emes, emes is Torah, and we appreciate that the words of Torah are the greatest reality, and shalom, and we try to bring that Torah to perfection by listening to it and by thinking into it, then when the emes and the shalom are beloved, then these days will no longer be days of mourning, but they'll turn into what's it called? The sason l'simcha. There'll be days of rejoicing and moadim tovim. There'll be mamish yomim tovim when Mashiach comes from here of yomeinu. I think that's okay. Yes.
Three questions. Well, how would you say about the army and need the people to learning and pray? How would you say that to a non-formed person to get that concept through?
That.
That we need the people learning.
The army. I hear you. I think that you have to tell them the following. Look, you're from your perspective, right, and from your background, I can understand that you don't hear what I'm saying. But at least know where I'm coming from. That we believe that these words and learning Torah or whatever, right, is the greatest reality there is. This is the world was created from the Torah. And therefore, people who are involved in that are doing a tremendous service to the world, right? Now, I can understand why you don't understand that because of your background. But at least understand that from our standpoint, we're not shirking responsibility. We're just fulfilling that responsibility a different way. Just like in the army, right? Not everybody does the same thing. If everybody would be on the front, then we'd never win a battle. You need people in the communications rooms, right? People in administration, people peeling potatoes in the kitchen. Right? If we put everybody on the front, there may be total equality, but they never win a war. But you need to feed the soldiers, and you need to make sure that the radio communications are taken care of, and everybody does their part. We just add one more part to that, and that is people who are providing the spiritual energy for the sake of security. And that's also an important part.
Also, the bracha that Yitzchak gives to Yaakov is that he has a power when he daven.
Right.
And then, and his brother has a power with the sword. So when he davens, he's higher than his brother, right?
Right, right. Again, a secular person who never had that perspective isn't going to be able to hear that, but at least he can hear that that's where we're coming from. We're not coming from a position of shirking responsibility. We're coming from a position of accepting responsibility just in a little bit different way, right? Just like in every situation. And we feel that what these boys are doing is just as important, if not more important, in the total security of the nation than the physical aspect. And the truth is that all the battles of modern-day Israel, right, most of them were won by miracle, right? So where do those miracles come from? It didn't come from people in the pubs. So there must have been some extraordinary power that is helping the Jewish people, and we believe that power comes from the people learning Torah.
Two more questions. What if we have to do something that looks doubtful? We have to go back to these people who saw us?
No, you should try to do things. It says, for instance, that the people who went in to count the coffers in the Beis HaMikdash, they had to open the pushkas or whatever, people... They went in with clothing that had no pockets or no hems. So there was no way that they could hide something, you know, and put a few shkolim in their own pockets. So that's the lengths you have to go to not to be suspected of doing something wrong, even if your intention is good. We learned that from B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven, right? They appeared to be afraid of going into battle, wanting their portion here when it wasn't true. They were willing to go and be in the vanguard of the fighters. But they made it look differently. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, you know, you can have good intentions, but if it looks bad, you're going to affect people negatively. So let's make it clear that you're not afraid. You're going to go into battle. You're just going to come back then. So that's that we learn from here. V'yisam nikiyam Hashem Yisrael. You should be clean, not only in God's eyes, but in the eyes of people too. So you should function in a way that you don't bring suspicion on yourself. On the other hand, if you don't, or you do things that are suspicious, other people have the mitzvah to judge you, and not to be suspicious, but to judge you favorably. So there's always two sides of the coin, right? Like Rav Meir Shapiro says, that everybody has their Torah in a relationship. If they keep their Torah, everything's fine. If they try to get the other person's Torah, for instance, somebody was a lender, and there's a person who's a debtor. He takes the loan. So the lender has his Torah. Don't take interest. Don't force the person. Don't be too overpressured if you know he can't pay. The person who takes the loan has his Torah. He has to scrimp and save and pay back on time. So if each one says their own Torah, I better not pressure you, and I better not take interest from you, and the other one says, I better scrimp and save and pay you back on time. Shalom al Yisrael. You know when the problems come? When the lender says, hey, you better scrimp and save and pay me back on time. And the other guy says, hey, you better not pressure me and take interest. Then there's problems. Same thing over here. I am supposed to not do things that make you suspicious of me. You're supposed to judge me favorably. So if I'm concerned about doing things in a way that doesn't arouse suspicion, and you're concerned about giving me the benefit of the doubt, everything's fine. But if I'm saying, you better give me the benefit of the doubt, you're saying, you better not do something that makes me suspicious, then we have problems. Mm-hmm. So that's the basic idea.
And how do you look at things when you know you're overcome by anger or jealousy?
And you're only focusing in on one thing?
Yeah.
So you have to calm down, and before you come to decisions or make... do things that are based on your feelings, calm down, maybe go ask advice from somebody who's not so heated up about the Indian, who can see it more objectively before you decide what to do and how to come to conclusions.